Hey everyone, welcome back to a new episode of Calculated Chaos. Today I'm here with Mr. Gareth Flower. Gareth, how are you keeping?
Good, thanks for having me.
No worries. Long time coming.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we had to got delayed with COVID, but glad to be here.
Yeah.
And we have Sonny with us today as well.
Yeah, bring the dog forward. So if he barks, sorry.
But. Yeah, just for anyone who's listening on audio, if you hear the dog barking. So I suppose, do you want to give a quick introduction to who you are? And I suppose we'll go from there then.
Sure. My name is Gareth Flower. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Park Office and also Park P&P. So Park Office is a parking management solution, a SaaS company that solves parking problems for some of the biggest enterprise companies in the world.
And I suppose, let's just take it back to the start, because obviously that's where you're at right now, but obviously a lot bigger journey is part of that. So where did you grow up? Where are you from?
So I'm originally from Longford, the heart of Ireland, as I like to say. So it's, you know, it's a quiet place, countryside, not a lot going on. But, you know, we're nicest people, nicest community out there. And growing up, I suppose, you know, you're out and about, you're in the fields, it's probably the best place to grow up, actually. You know, it's really safe as a kid, you're out and about. And jumping on bales, all that sort of fun stuff. And then you grow up, and like I grew up and my parents started a fruit juice business. So I suppose getting into the entrepreneurship, my parents had a fruit juice business called Passion Fruit. And I remember to this day, you know, as a kid, I was going around helping my dad move the cases of Passion Fruit. It was this lovely little drink. And they scaled that business up to a decent-sized business that was selling into Sainsbury's. Fortunately, my parents broke up and got divorced, and then the business didn't survive post that. But I always remembered that as a great moments early on, where we were out and about, you know, meeting customers and, you know, them tasting the fruit juice and loving it. You know, so fond memories early on of startup, but that's where I came from.
And I suppose looking back, hindsight 2020 now, coming from entrepreneurial parents, what do you think you saw, or what characteristics in them do you see has been bred into you now? Because obviously, I know now, coming up on the age of social media, entrepreneurs are the boats, the cars, the women. But speaking from experience, as my dad being an entrepreneur of 25 years, it's a very different view when your parents are entrepreneurs. So what do you think you saw in that, or what characteristics and skills did you learn from them that you took forward into where you are now?
Yeah, it's a good question and something I've thought about a good bit. Nature versus nurture and all that. I think, you know, I would have a different upbringing than probably most. My mom is Puerto Rican from the Caribbean. So, you know, it's an American territory, an island off of Florida. And my dad's a farmer from Longford, so you know it's they met in New York. My dad was traveling the world. He bought a motorbike and just traveled the world for 8 years, and landed in New York just on the way home, and met my mom in an Irish bar. And my mom was Miss Puerto Rico, so she had this, you know, she was a stunning young lady. And then she moved to America. Moved to New York. Sorry, she was in America, but she moved to New York. And got a job there, and she ended up becoming head of marketing for Esso for Central and South America. So she was executive type, and then my dad, you know, had just traveled the world, so crazy mix. But on top of that, my granddad was a famous politician in Puerto Rico. He ran the Hispanic campaign for John F. Kennedy, and in doing that, he actually became really close friends with John F. Kennedy and the Kennedy family. And actually, you know, I grew up listening to all these great stories about how my mum played in the White House with John Jr. And, you know, growing up in Longford and watching E! True Hollywood Story, you guys are maybe too young for this, but E! True Hollywood Story would document the life of different famous people, and they'd do one on John F. Kennedy. And in the documentary, we'd see my mum playing with John Jr. And like, you know, this is just insanely intense to see as a kid, how my granddad and granny were these great people, you know, and they went to all these events, like the famous event when Marilyn Monroe sang Happy Birthday, Mr. President to the Kennedys. They were there. You know, my granddad invited Kennedy over a number of times to Puerto Rico, along with numerous people, like Gorbachev, the president of Russia, came over and stayed and did a conference for him. And I mean, that all of these amazing stories, and on top of that, you know, probably not supposed to say it, but he worked for the CIA after Kennedy was assassinated, and they gave him land in Nicaragua, and you know, all of these amazing stories of this great man. And you know, as a kid, you're filled with these ideals of greatness. You know, you think, wow, okay, now I'm supposed to do something great myself. So normal didn't seem like a thing. It seemed like I had this inside track to what life should be, and you know, I should really go for it. And from an early age, my parents brought me to Puerto Rico, which is a Caribbean island, a number of times, and we traveled a lot. And to get an insight into the rest of the world gave what I felt gave me an advantage early on, because I was able to see, okay, the world is a big place and there is lots that can be done. And you know, starting off, you know, from a very early age, I wanted to be my own boss, and I just thought I knew, you know, you have this confidence, you feel you know more than most, and that gave me the confidence to go out and try new things.
Wow. Yeah, because like, I suppose a lot of people from the countryside, coming from Galway myself, like, yeah, there is a countryside mentality, and even an Irish mentality, and I never got that vibe from any of the interactions we've had online or now in person. I've never felt the Irish mentality of, you know, it's Ireland's the center of the universe or whatever. So that makes a lot of sense that you would have traveled a lot, because I really do feel like traveling changes a person. It opens your mind up to so many different types of life, and it, I think, does open you up to bigger and higher heights, you know what I mean? Because there's no real glass ceiling there. But then I suppose, being in school then, what were you like as a student? How did you find school?
Yeah, school was tough for me. I wasn't a bad student, but I wasn't a great student. I was a frustrated student is what I would say. You know, I didn't enjoy the subjects I was learning. I have this, you know, this is almost becoming a famous story in my old school in Wilson's, but you know, there was a moment where, you know, one of my teachers told me I should do pass level education, or pass level geography. And being told what I should do was always, you know, it kicked in the rebel in me. So immediately the blinkers went on, and I said, you know what, I'm going to do honors. And she's like, no, I think you should do pass, you know. And there was this very awkward moment in where I just backed myself. And as a 15-year-old, just after junior cert, to back yourself to actually do honors, I just wanted to prove a point then that I could do honours. And I ended up getting an A1 in honours geography. It was hilarious, because every other class I think I scraped by like D and a C, you know, max. So I think that was the very early signals on the type of person I was becoming. But in school, it was never really my environment. I enjoyed the social aspect. I enjoyed having friends. I enjoyed sports a lot. I initially thought that I would be a professional soccer player. I even played in a Madrid development camp at 16. I went over there for a month and a half playing football. Got to play the Spanish under 17s. So at an early age, like, I was pretty confident in myself and my own abilities. So that's but I always knew education was just a part-time thing that I was going to get past.
Wow. And so, okay, so that's probably the fact that you highlighted that was a very developmental stage for you, that when you backed yourself and you believed in yourself and you bet on yourself, realistically, even at a young age, you're able to pull some really cool things off. So I suppose that's planting a seed. Yeah. And then how was the Leaving Cert year for you, and how was the build up to that? Because obviously teachers, their center of the universe is the Leaving Cert. That's the be all and end all. And that's the end of life. So how was that for you, and how was that year for you? And then did you have a goal of going to college, or did you know what college course you wanted to do then?
Yeah, look, and don't get me wrong, a lot of people, you know, my fiance included, she got top marks in the entire country. You know, she got 780 points, which is over double what I got, you know, like, so there is a place for education, and lots of people are, you know, enjoy it and should go after the result. But for me, the Leaving Cert was a stepping stone to get past. And I think that a lot of pressure and unnecessary pressure is put on a lot of young people. I remember, I take pressure fairly well, so I didn't really feel it, but I remember people getting sick the whole week of the Leaving Cert. I remember like literally going to brush my teeth, and because I was a boarder in Wilson's, and I remember people getting sick, like of the nerves. And that's just, I mean, at such a young age, that's traumatic. Like, you know, if people are doing that, you know, there's something wrong. And I just believe that at such an early age, I think that you don't know, and nobody knows, not even the teachers know, or lots of people can't guide you as to what you are going to do next. And I think that system needs to be fixed. But I believe the Leaving Cert is a stepping stone for most people at the start of their lives. They should think of it as a mark in the sand, and that's it. And I wouldn't put as much pressure on everybody for that.
And so then, finishing off your Leaving Cert year, did you know what college course you wanted to do?
Oh yeah, sorry, I went on a rant there and forgot where I was going. So I actually wanted to be a professional sports player. Initially, I started in soccer. Actually, that summer I went to Spain, played against the Spanish under-17s. I got whooped. You know, I was playing against the best players I've ever played against, and I couldn't even get the ball. And I remember thinking, this is the best I've ever been, and I can't even get the ball. So I just remember thinking, this isn't my future. I'm like, I was a very confident person. And when you absolutely have this gap of quality, it just signaled to me, you know, no amount of training is going to get me to this level. So for me, it was time to refocus. I refocused on rugby because I was in a rugby school, decided maybe I'll gain some weight, tackle rugby for a while. And I actually, you know, took that pretty seriously for a while. And actually, you know, there's a really proud moment I have it where, you know, I hadn't played rugby up until 17, and then I got on the cup team for the Leaving Cert, which was very competitive, obviously, to get onto. And for the first game, I was benched, started on the bench. And I remember feeling so dejected because I worked so hard for this moment to get on the cup team. And then I came on at halftime, and the first play, I got the ball, I ran half the pitch and scored a try. And like, it was literally a game defining moment as well. So I, like, that's one of those moments where you back yourself and then you see the result. But I had to focus on UL, University of Limerick, to do sports science. And I just didn't get it. I didn't get enough points, and I ended up going to Dublin Business School in the city centre of, and I studied accountancy and finance, and it wasn't in my initial pick, but my dad said to me, he's like, look, you know, you can't just, I don't believe you should do another year, I don't believe you should repeat, I think you should just go to Dublin and get it, go to college. So I did that, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me, you know.
And what made you go down towards accountancy and finance? Did you do any business or accountancy subjects in Leaving Cert, and what made you kind of go that route specifically out of all the business subjects?
So yeah, good question. I suppose in school, I'd always had a fascination over business, and you know, I would go into the business studies class and constantly, you know, want more. I wanted to learn more about business. And you know, I was very passionate about sports, but when I realized that that wasn't going the way I wanted it to, then I started to think, okay, well, what would set me up for business? And accountancy and finance is the basics, you know, learning about your cash flows, your profit and loss accounts, that's so important. So I just figured that that was a good foundation. And to be honest, nobody knows at 18, 19, you just take an estimated guess with the help of your advisors, which are your parents, essentially. At that age, and that's what I did.
And how was college then for you? Were you an engaged student? Were you a bit more laid back, or what way were you through your 4 years of college?
college was brilliant for the social aspect for me initially. You know, I'm an extroverted person, so going to a new city, moving up from, you know, the countryside was everything you'd expect. You know, there's still wild stage you move through, and then you go into the, okay, you learn a bit more, you know, where you are, you're familiar with the city. And then I started to really knuckle down and focus to make sure that I ended up in a good position after college. So yeah, college was good. Dublin Business School is a great college. They really helped me out. They, you know, they gave me all part-time jobs every summer. They gave me jobs during the year. Student council, head of the rugby association, you know, rugby captain. I loved it. I got really immersed in the college. I even presented an opportunity eventually for an entrepreneurs society. There was never an entrepreneurs society up until that point. Shows you how far entrepreneurship has come. But I presented the first entrepreneurship society at that time, which led me to my first business partner in Cross Bakery, which we'll touch on, I suppose, a little bit later.
Yeah.
So while in college, so obviously a lot of people are probably in Dublin Business School and in college studying kind of business. Do you have any entrepreneurial flares or any business you set up during college?
I do, actually. I at the time I was living in Temple Bar in the city centre, and I was living with three other people, and I started to see this opportunity where a lot of my friends were staying the night in my apartment or coming over to pre-drink in the apartment. And so what I started to realize was that there was a need for people to go somewhere before they went out. And so I started hosting these nights. The apartment was called E7. So I started hosting these nights called E7 to 11. And I would charge people 10 euros in, and they could come in and get free drink and free food in my apartment in Temple Bar before heading out. And yeah, there was a huge demand. I ended up running 2 to 3 nights a week for this concept, and we would have on average about 40 people every night show up. So it was we definitely spotted a market opportunity, and we would bring those 40 people to the nightclub and get them free in as well, where there was normally an admission fee. And so this was a very popular thing to do during college, and it really kickstarted my entrepreneurial ventures.
And then looking back now at college, what was the biggest thing you learned? What was the biggest thing you took away? And it could be in the curriculum or extracurricular. What was the biggest thing that you were happy that you went to college for?
I suppose the biggest learning for me was the independence of being in a city that I didn't know, and learning to grasp that city and become familiar with it. And then almost that independence it gave me. I learned that I could be self-sustaining as an individual and create opportunities for myself. And, you know, as you're leaving school, you always have that nervousness that you're unable to do that. And moving to Dublin, Ireland's capital, and being able to be self-sustaining was the best thing that I got from moving up.
And just last thing, touching on college, did you find the coursework now as an entrepreneur benefit you in a big way? Or, like, let's say, did you find the curriculum gave you the springboard to be able to help you in your entrepreneurial journeys?
Look, I've said it before, I think the education system needs a lot of work. Mm-hmm. I think that the lecturers can only do as much as they can do. But I do believe a new format is required. I believe actually a match, just as we're moving into this remote world, I do believe a match of virtual education and project-based work and in class is the future. I think a mixture of all three is probably where we're heading in the next 10 years.
Okay. So then coming out of college then, what were your prospects looking like? Obviously, you've done your 4 years of college, you have your degree. I suppose, maybe from my perspective, there's maybe a social, you're socially accepted or expected to go into a role in that area. So where did you go next, and how did you take maybe the social pressures on said decision?
Yeah, so I probably went down the road less travelled. I had met my first business partner, Devin Hughes, who now runs Buy Me, very successful grocery delivery platform in Ireland. We first met during the E7 to 11 phase, and he was keen to get involved, and he did. So we both joined together, and we looked at new business opportunities together to get involved in. And we started to think, okay, well, what is there out there? My dad is a farmer, and he has 80 acres of land in Longford. So we started to think, okay, well, I'm not going to be a farmer. It's not in my roadmap. So what could we do with that land? And we started with this idea, playing with this idea of creating a renewable energy farm. And we went about this wild journey of setting up a renewable energy company, eSound Energy, which you know, I could talk for hours about where that brought us, but we ended up working with one of the world's foremost experts in the area, Diego Belmonte, and he brought us out to LA and New Mexico, introduced us to a whole bunch of people out there and experts in the area. And you know, during that time, the recession was digging its heels in, and we couldn't find anyone to buy our products. And at such an early age, you know, and you guys will know this, there's a lot of ageism in Ireland. Ageism is a big thing, less so in America, but ageism is a big thing in Ireland. And I suppose trying to convince people to buy LED lighting or to put solar panels on their farms or in their housing, it was just very difficult, and too difficult for us at you know, 21, 22. So we packed that in. We tried one other thing, and that didn't work for briefly. And then we moved on to different things. Devin actually moved into a corporate job, and I joined State Street as an accountant for a while as well. And eventually I ran into my next business partner, Rob Kramer. And Rob essentially is a big Austrian bodybuilder, and when we met, he brought over a basket of pastries, and these pastries were delicious. They had coconut in them, dark chocolate, and raisin, and they were so good that I said to Rob, you know, we should sell these into coffee shops around Dublin. And so over the next 3 weeks, we did, and that started my whole journey on Crust Bakery.
So then obviously, so you had this product, you knew it was good because you started going to coffee shops and started to sell. I suppose from an entrepreneurial perspective, did you the flair, was it the prospect? Because obviously you probably didn't grow up going, I'm going to sell pastries and get into this market. You know what I mean? What was it that drove you to go, this is it, this is the idea I'm going to get behind, I'm going to go after it? Because obviously you probably had a decent, because obviously your degree, you're in an accounting firm. So you would have had probably a decent enough wage and good growth potential. And I know you said from a young age, you knew you didn't want to work for people. But what was it about this idea that kind of gave you that excitement to go, this is it, this is what I'm going to pursue?
Yeah, so I suppose you guys will know this from, you know, the web services company. It's less about the passion initially when you're starting out for what you're doing, and more that you're creating something. And so we had tried to start two different companies, myself and Devin, and I learned what I didn't want to do. You know, I learned these are things I don't want to do.
Yeah.
And with the pastries, myself and Rob going and introducing and selling these pastries, to see people's reactions as so positive and so happy and so genuine, it was immediately clear that, wow, this is a great industry to be in. The food industry is a very happy industry. You go and you meet people, you give them a pastry, you make their day. You know, it's a great business. We grew quite quickly as well, which also helped. You know, like 30 coffee shops in 3 weekends worth of work. Like it was quick. And not only that, we were able to then outsource production quite quickly to a professional baker. And, you know, you have to remember, we were baking in my apartment in Temple Bar to start off. Like, it was crazy. And we outsourced production, and then we were able to go to Super Values all across the country and sell. Like, and it multiplied the business dramatically. Like, we grew like a tech company, 0 to 1 million in 18 months. You know, it was it was insane growth. And we, you know, we were two guys trying to learn on the fly. So everything from hiring, firing, supply, production, everything was new and exciting. And, you know, we knew very quickly that this was taking, it was taking very quickly for supermarkets who were calling us and saying it's sold off the shelves. You know, can we get more? And for us, this couldn't be big enough. We thought we were going to be the biggest bakery brand in the West, in Western Europe. That's the way we were thinking. And it started to evolve. And I suppose one of the learnings from all of this is that when you're young, you have the energy to try new things. And I would strongly recommend that you try things that scare you. And I knew nothing about baking. I'm not even a good baker myself, not even now. And I would suggest that it's, you don't have to be great at what you're offering, but you have to be great at building people in who are great, you know. And that's what we did. We brought in people who were very passionate and very strong in these in different areas, and we brought the best people in the world together, and it helped grow the company very quickly. Crust then, we took a strategic decision based on pure interest in a different area in retail. So we decided that Starbucks was growing really quickly. We decided, well, Starbucks would be better if their bakery was better. So we thought we would create a better version of Starbucks. And, you know, we were making good money at the time. And we thought, okay, we'll invest and create our own brand of coffee shop. And we set up Crust Bakery, first coffee shop in 32 Anger Street in Dublin 2. And it was a two-seater location, very small, but it was right outside DIT. And we knew the student demographic. We were basically just out of college, you know. And so we built the sandwiches big. We sold them in volume, you know, cheap enough sandwiches, big sandwiches, because everybody wanted big volume. You know, burritos then came in, which were animal burritos, and they were selling off the shelves. Everybody wanted volume, and we were offering these huge offerings and good coffee and good vibes. Like, we played reggae music, you know, so it was this crazy vibe of reggae music in a coffee shop bakery in the city center. And things went so well that after 12 months, we decided to set up a second location on Georgia Street, 6 South Great Georgia Street, which is one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in the country. You know, that street, so valuable. And we benefited from the fact that the recession was still gripping the country. There was a huge amount of vacant space. And we were, you know, energetic entrepreneurs coming in with a new, fresh idea. So we clicked well with the landlord. He was extremely supportive. You know, we were very lucky that we got a really nice landlord who supported the business early on. And I think that made all the difference. We were able to, because a lot of problems happen in retail, you know, everything that can go wrong does go wrong. And this is an important lesson for other young entrepreneurs, in that, you know, stepping outside your comfort zone is good, but you learn quite quickly that you need to do more and more research and analysis about the steps you're going to take. And one of the things that we made a mistake on was that we had a very successful wholesale distribution business, but then we moved into retail, which is a whole different beast of a business, and it has all of these different complexities. And we went from a few staff to, you know, hundreds of staff over years, like 2 or 3 years, and it just became this beast that everything was happening so fast. We needed to work 20-hour days, 7 days a week, just to keep up. We felt, you know, every second of the day, we would be in there eating and drinking everything just from the shop, keeping everything, and just staying there and working on our business. And it was really exciting for the first few years. And then we started to get burnt out. And I think this is a lesson that a lot of entrepreneurs learn, is that there's a mantra of work hard. And you know, you want to give everything to your business. You become the vision, the face of your business. All your friends recognize you as this business owner, but then you start to get physically and emotionally exhausted from how much energy you're putting into this business. And that came very hard for me. I needed to take like 2 months off just to recover from this crazy exhaustion period of my life, where we had built this significant wholesale distribution business, a retail business, and then following on from that, a catering business where we supplied offices all over Dublin. All of that together was Crust Bakery. And, you know, we built a great business. And I think from such an early age, there's a huge amount of learnings on that. I exited the business just over two years ago. But it was the first business that was able to pay me a living salary to do my own thing. And you'll know this, you know, that's one of the best things that can ever happen to you. You know, you have all the activity that you put in results in you being able to pay yourself and do what you want to do, which is extremely satisfying.
During the exit process, had you, obviously, so you had your burnout period, and how did you take upon selling it? Because obviously, the first business that was able to pay you salary, the first business you've given so many hours to, and you're, I've heard a lot of people talk about the emotional attachment that's like shouldn't be there, but is there in your first kind of couple of businesses. How did you feel about selling it, and were you enthusiastic to be persuaded, or how were you during that process?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's not an easy process. And I suppose, like, you have to be realistic as well in that, you know, everybody expects you to, you know, just have a business that you sell like a coffee, you know, and that's really not how it works. And like for me personally, it was a very tearing experience, because you have to, as your first business, I don't think it was as much a passion about the business, but the hardest part was actually building the confidence in yourself to believe you can do it again. And I think a lot of my friends find the same thing, is that this business has gotten to a certain point and you've poured so much energy into it, and you look back at that mountain of energy and you think, can I do this again? You know, it's actually quite daunting. And, you know, I didn't exit for anything really of value in terms of a sale. You know, it was more, I put in place people who I believe could grow the business better than me. And I think that's my take, because I believed more in the fact that I would love to see the business doing extremely well, rather than me trying to take all the cash flow now and or cash out of the business. I was a bit of a purist. I much prefer to see something I create go for 20, 30, 40 years than I would, you know, build it and sell it in 2, 3, 4 years. I just don't find any enjoyment out of that. I think that's more car salesman-y, you know, flipping couches sort of thing. It's less what I'm about. I'm about building things that last.
Okay. And so obviously you exited Crust, and obviously, like you just alluded to there, you look back at all the energy, all the time, all the blood, sweat and tears, I'd say, that went into Crust, and you're sold, you're looking around. Had you the next venture planned out, or were you kind of in a bit of a grey space at that point?
So I had opened myself up to new ideas. I've always had new ideas, and it's one thing I don't lack is new ideas. I'm sure you're the same. But the big thing for me were these ideas something that I would get into, that I would see a huge future in? And I started to look for new ideas when my business partner and I were thinking about doing new things. And, you know, he eventually moved to Portugal. And that really defined it for me. I started to think, okay, well, what could I do? And I had this idea for Park P&P, which came next. Essentially, I bought a car for the first time. You know, my girlfriend, now fiance, she was sick of getting the bus into town. So she was like, you know, you got to buy yourself a car. So got a car, and the first day with the car, I was driving through Ranelagh, literally the first day with the car, and I couldn't find any parking. And it was like 20 minutes up and down this road past Smith's Pub. And it was literally like 20 minutes of frustration, just looking for a space. And I just thought, oh my God, why did I buy this car? You know, we could have just taken the Lewis as per normal and gotten there quicker and saved this hassle. And then I started to see all this open space in front of people's driveways. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to chance my arm here, and just drove into this parking space in front of someone's house. And I knocked on the door, and this lady came out, and I said to her, look, I'm so sorry, but I'm just wondering, is there any chance I could leave the car here for a few hours? I just can't find a parking space anywhere. And she said to me, she's like, oh, no worries, that's fine, totally fine. I was like, oh, thanks so much. So then, like, you know, we went to our event, and on the way back, I bought her chocolates and brought her 10 euros. And when I gave it to her, she was like, oh my God, I should do this all the time. And I just thought, like, oh my God, why don't people do this? You know, why don't people rent out their driveways the same way Airbnb rents out your room or your house? And the idea stuck with me. It just stuck with me that, like, actually renting out your driveway would be easier than renting out your house, because there's no maintenance, there's no cleaners, there's, you know, it's seamless, really. And I started to think, okay, this is a big idea. And it, as it turned out, in college, I did one project. They gave us the theme of find the most profitable business in the world. And what I presented was the car park. A car park is the most profitable business because it's literally a mound of concrete and everybody comes and goes. You have maybe one person and a barrier. The maintenance fees are, you know, whatever. Not huge fees per year compared to the throughput of, you know, 200, 300, 400 cars every single day. So, and it also goes up with inflation. So I had this sort of fascination with building assets that are quite lucrative, like a car park, and a virtual car park to me made total sense. So I ended up thinking, okay, well, this is a brilliant idea. I'll start researching it. I started researching it, and I found that there was companies starting to pop up doing this in America, in the UK, in Germany, etc. And they were growing and scaling really quickly. So I thought, okay, need to move fast on this. It just so happened, and this is where luck plays in, right? And I really am a strong believer that, you know, luck is about putting yourself in the right position, and then the work effort behind that gives you, you know, the result. I was doing a catering delivery for Crust, and I was catering to a Bank of Ireland event. Bank of Ireland have always been good supporters of Crust. They put us on every bank branch. They put us on all the ATMs in a nationwide campaign. It was crazy, crazy support, which I'm always thankful for. But I was catering to this Bank of Ireland event, and I brought a basket of pastries in and was laying it out. And I look on stage, and there's this tech team pitching their new idea. Gymmer it was called at the time. And it was a platform marketplace for gyms. And I just looked at the pitch wasn't that great, right? But the design of the product, the app, the website, so slick. And you guys being digital natives will understand that the consumer is getting so used to a standard, a high standard of technology, that I just thought, I need this high standard of technology. So I invited the guys into the bakery and pitched them Park P&P and gave them loads of coffee and loads of donuts. And, like, you know, I suppose it was an impressive pitch. You know, they were sitting in a coffee shop in the center of Dublin. You know, I had a lot of energy, a lot more energy at the time, enthusiasm maybe. And I pitched Park P&P, and they jumped in. So I was lucky in that I met a group of very talented developers, my co-founder Dan, who's our CTO. And then we started building out an MVP of Park P&P. And just to give you some other sight on that process, like I'd also pitched to agencies and different developers before that and got ridiculous quotes to build the website and the app. Like some guy quoted me 800,000, you know, and like thinking, you know, I was the king of coffee shops, maybe, you know, 800,000 to develop the app and the website. So, you know, these guys were willing to do it for a bit of equity, sweat equity, and we built Park PMP, which at the beginning we created the MVP, minimum viable product. And once we created the MVP, my job was to go out and knock on 300 doors and get 300 people signed, way more than 300 doors, but get 300 people signed up renting their parking space. So over 4 weeks, I got 300 parking spaces signed up for people. I would go knock on doors, which is a really hard thing to do, knock on doors and say, hey, you know, my name's Gareth. I'm with Park PMP. I'd never say I'm the CEO knocking on the door, but I'd say I'm Gareth with Park PMP. You know, we're this brand new platform marketplace for parking. You can rent out your parking space for free today, no cost, and you can make 200 to 300 euros per month on the platform. And you can say yes or no to all the bookings that come in, but if you're not on the platform, you have a chance of missing out. And so people saw it as a, you know, no cost opportunity, and they jumped on. And like, we quickly scaled over the last 3 and 4 years now to 24,000 parking spaces across Ireland, Belgium, and the Netherlands. So in doing that, you know, I picked a market opportunity, and we ended up fundraising 1.5 million euros for this opportunity. And after 2.5 years of growing the business, we started to realize that there was also an opportunity in enterprise parking. And it's, you know, sometimes, and this is a great lesson in that, sometimes where you begin is not where you end. And if you don't begin, you don't get to that holy land, you know. So we ended up in a B2C business. We started in a B2C business marketplace, and we grew into a B2B SaaS play, more so. And that's really where we're focusing now, is Park Office, where we maximize the use of parking spaces for large enterprise all across the world. So we're in 10 countries. We just recently hit our milestone of 10 Fortune 500 companies, some notable names like L'Oreal, Colliers, CBRE. And I suppose our goal is to originally to optimize parking spaces, understand through data, and then reduce the need for parking. Because the future, there's going to be a reduction in the need for parking spaces. In the US alone, there's the same amount of parking space per square meter as there is office space. Can you imagine how much like space that is? It's insane. And as cars get smarter, they're going to look towards data management and efficiency management tools like Park Office to maximize the use of space. And, you know, we've started to see very strong growth. Like since we started, we've, you know, last year we grew 350% in the year of COVID. So, you know, bright things ahead for us and this company. And you know, we're lucky to have a very resilient team, you know. So I've come a long way, I suppose, from apartment E7 to 11, student beer sessions to SaaS solutions to some of the largest companies in the world, some which I can't even name, but that you use their services. And I think the benefit of all of that is that I now am in a position where I've experienced multiple different businesses, and I'm able to talk to you guys and hopefully share some of that knowledge to speed you guys up and help you guys out as well. So yeah, really enjoying the journey the last 10, 12 years, being able to pay myself. I think very grateful for it. It's something that I've always been passionate about, and to be able to do it as my full-time job for so many years is definitely something I'm hugely grateful for.
And then, like, that's a crazy journey, like, hearing it just from you. But Then looking at your role right now, what is your job role at the moment? Like, what does your day-to-day look like? Because I remember I was talking to you about this previously, is I know you're a big proponent of having three things you want to get done each day and be making sure they get done. They're your three big things. So what is your role right now, and why have you selected that role for yourself?
Yeah, so I try and get three things, core things done every day, and I try and do this, what I call deep work. So essentially pick three things every day that you think will propel your business or your life forward. Okay, so, you know, I take a bit of time at the start of every day and I think about that. Sometimes I do it the night before, and it's essentially mapping out, here's where I want to get to and here's where I am right now, and breaking it down from 10 years, 5 years, 1 year, 12 months, you know, 1 month, 1 week, today. What are the things that you need to do to get you to move closer to those goals? And I mean, that changes, right? Sometimes it changes. There's a little bit of flexibility there. But by doing that, it enables you to see the progress, see the momentum on a micro scale, on a day-to-day. And I really focus on winning my day. And it's just about making sure I knock out those three things. And most days, and this is controversial, lots of people still work those 20-hour days, right? I don't believe in that anymore. I actually believe you knock out those three things the best you can do. If they're really well thought out, that's it for the day. You don't need to keep going and doing 10 things in one day unless you want to. But I personally am now in a point where I focus a lot of thought on those three things, and then I put in my best deep work into doing those three things to the best of my ability. And then I focus on maximizing my body and mind for the next day. So it's all about putting in the best concentration for those three things, and that's it. Right now I'm the CEO and co-founder of Park Office and Park P&P. And, you know, we're in this business now a couple of years, and I have a plan with the team over the next 10 to 15 years to see this company become one of the most successful companies out of Ireland.
Wow. And I suppose this is probably coming from more of my experience, but how would you advise a younger person plan the next 10 years? I come from my perspective is I'm only 19, so I haven't even experienced 2 decades on this planet. And I've always found that trying to plan 10 years down the line, as much as I do try and do it, I find that a weird thing, because I don't even know what 27 looks like. You know what I mean? So I suppose, do you have any advice or anything looking back now that you possibly did? Because, like, whenever I make a decision, business or personal, I try and always look at it from the longer term perspective and not try and make the short term wins. You know what I mean? Because typically they'd be very much conflicting. I know I kind of try and use Gary Vee's mantra of a micro speed, macro patience. Day to day, you know, optimize your day, and in the long term, it'll all kind of work out, I suppose. So do you have any advice on how to try and plan that longer going forward as a younger person?
Yeah, so 10 years is a hard one, right? So 10 years should be like a dream, shot to the moon position, right? So something that, like, you say and it sounds almost mad, right? And, like, you know, your 10 years keeps going. So, yeah. I mean, every year you reanalyze, reevaluate, and you look at that. And, like, my 10-year plan when I was 21 was totally different from what it is now. But I feel that I've come along. If I didn't make those plans, I wouldn't have made the decision, for example, to leave Crust. Like, I saw very early on from planning ahead that this wasn't in line with what I wanted. Like, I had seen guys who were the most successful guys in the food and beverage space, and that's not the life I wanted. You know, I met them and I talked to them, and they were still working nonstop in that business at 60, 70 years of age. And that actually wasn't what I wanted to do. I believed in technology, and I started to realize more and more that technology was the space I wanted to be in, and the growth that could be possible from that, and to be able to affect 1 billion people. That was something that really interested me. So that was in my 10-year plan. And I realized I made the hard decision that what I'm doing right now doesn't fit with my vision for myself. And I suppose I would say to you, some advice is, you know, plan it out and write it down between you and yourself. And it's, you know, it's not about trying to impress someone else, you know, like by them reading your 10-year wish list. Like myself and Devin, you know, we were silly at the start and we had little motivational slides of Ferraris and, you know, big houses and stuff. Like, we still have that fun, you know, but that's not the motivation really, you know, that's fun. But the actual motivation is a short story on this. The happiest moment I have in business, some of the happiest moments are, everybody says the first day opening your coffee shop, right? Actually, that was the most stressful day, right? Opening the coffee shop, hoping people would come in, you know, hoping they'd like the product, hopefully they'd buy it, not complain about the price, you know, hopefully the electricity wouldn't cut out, you know, all this stress. But after a couple of weeks, I remember coming down to the shop and there was this girl standing at the door and she was on her phone. And I was walking into the shop and she's like, "Hey, I'm down a crust. Do you want anything?" And I just remember thinking, oh my God, like I've created a moment in someone else's life where they're confident enough in our product, service and quality that they're literally calling one of their friends to ask them, do they want a bit of that as well? And that just like actually made me very emotional on the day, because this was, you're creating moments of happiness for people. And I think, you know, deep down you want, that's why doing good feels good, you know, and you keep reciprocating it, because if you can build things that benefit others, like you know, you guys build websites for people and grow their business, you know, if you can do that, they're always going to love you. You know, you're doing something that people will love you for, if you do a good job. And I think that comes down to the core of it for me, what I'm really excited about, what I'm passionate about. And I think that then helps me to shape my 10-year vision of what I want to do. And like you guys will know, you know, recently I created a community of entrepreneurs, Magnate 100, of 100 of Ireland's entrepreneurs and creators. And essentially it's there to help support each other, because I didn't have that support growing up. And that for me is fulfillment, because I'm able to add value or help people connect and add value for each other, which makes me more fulfilled knowing that if I wasn't here, that maybe wouldn't have happened. And that's the, I suppose, in line with my vision of 10 years, how do I maximize myself, my time to help as many people, or to create products and services that help as many people as possible. You know, we park tens of thousands of people and we save them a mountain of time because they're not driving to places that they don't have space. And like, you know, I don't know where this quote came from, but the best businesses are time machines. And I totally believe that if you can save people time, that's the most valuable commodity in the world, is time. So we're in Park Office building a time machine for not having to waste your bloody time on parking, because it's really a pain in the ass. So all across the spectrum, we're saving tens of thousands of people time, eventually millions of people's time parking. And everything I do moving forward will have a benefit for people in some way.
And is that why you started creating your personal brand as well on the impact side? Because I know obviously in the last year or so you've started doing YouTube and you're putting out business-based content. Is that kind of in line as well with your kind of 10-year plans as well?
Yeah, YouTube is an exciting and scary experiment that I'm doing. But essentially it came about because myself and Dan, my co-founder in Park Office, when the pandemics happened, we started to ask each other, you know, how can we help? And lots of people were getting into buying PPE equipment and, you know, raising money for charity. And we just started to think, okay, well, what is our strong suit, you know? And one of the strengths we had was maybe to help other people who are interested in starting a business. Like I started my first business in the last recession. So recession in a way is kind of like pandemic or the recession that's hopefully not coming. But we started to see that this was a wave of change, and a lot of people are interested in starting their own business now, and it gives people a time to reflect this time at home. So Dan and I started doing this thing called Innovation Saturdays, where we would give up 15 to 30 minutes of our time to any aspiring entrepreneur of any age to pitch their business ideas or just pitch problems with their business. And we started thinking, you know, this would be one or two people that would have, you know, this phone call with us, but it turned into full day sessions, you know, really quickly. We were doing 9 to 5 on Saturdays, bouncing different ideas and off aspiring entrepreneurs and troubleshooting problems. And like any entrepreneur, you know, time is precious. And when you're doing this over 2-3 month period, you know, I started to realize, okay, well, this is becoming a full-time job here. And I believe the best social projects are the ones that are self-sustaining, right? And can figure a way of impacting the most amount of people. And I realized that I'm not going to do this forever. I won't live forever. So I started to think, how can I automate what I'm answering? And a lot of entrepreneurs ask the same questions starting out. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to put up some videos on what people are asking me, act as content creation, and put them out on YouTube. And so that led me down to creating the Garrett Flower YouTube channel, where I answer questions on entrepreneurship, personal finance, and self-improvement, which I think embodies my core values as well. So I think that's an important thing for me and fits in with my 10-year vision, my life goals as well. So to help as many people as possible.
Your YouTube channel will be linked down below anywhere if anyone wants to go check that out. And I know one of the videos that did very well recently was how you spent $1 million on a Bitcoin in a couple nights. So do you want to give a brief overview of that story as well of what they can get in your YouTube channel?
Yeah, sure. So I suppose I recently released a video which was probably more to do with a funny story of my journey and just to A/B test the channel and see how it goes. And actually it did quite well. It was about my time in Crust, where we were one of the first coffee shops in Ireland to bring in an iPad till. So we brought in this iPad till, which allowed us to save $2,000 a year from not getting one of these big cash registers that was the norm back then. And on the iPad till, we were able to do a number of different things now with the usability. So we thought, wouldn't it be cool to accept Bitcoin? And so we set up our Bit wallet and we started to accept Bitcoin for coffees and donuts. And this was 2015, where Bitcoin was trading around $315. And for any of you Bitcoin cryptocurrency aficionados will start cringing, you know, at the fact that we had, you know, we had accepted about 7,500 euros worth of Bitcoin, which was about $9,000. And myself and Rob, after about 6 months, we started to realize that there was a gap where people had just stopped paying in Bitcoin. And we thought, okay, you know, this is a fad. The currency is going to drop through the floor now. You know, this new cryptocurrency is all speculative. So we decided it was best to spend that $7,500 before it lost its value. And so we did that. We went and we bought beers and pizzas and places that everywhere that accepted Bitcoin, we would spend it. And I suppose if you do out the maths now today, you know, trading, I think the last time I looked at it was trading around 34,000 per Bitcoin. It means we spent about $960,000 on pizzas and beers and yeah, so the most expensive food and drink I've ever had. But you live and you learn.
Yeah, I remember watching that video, and I think we all sent it to each other, actually. We were all sharing this video around, and I think the common word used all across the whole thing was heartbreaking. I think I saw the message on Slack to Eric and Kevin.
And look, this is a good lesson. Like, too many entrepreneurs make it look in the media that they are the guys with the Midas touch. You know, everybody makes mistakes. Nobody knows everything. Nobody knows the future. And I think it's a perfect reflection of, you know, you make a good call. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. C'est la vie. That's it. You know, there's no point in dwelling on it.
No, absolutely. So I suppose just trying to wrap it up and trying to get the most value for someone watching this, someone possibly looking into getting into business, someone just starting off in business, what advice would you give them to this current landscape? Obviously, the world is kind of up on its head. Certain industries are starting to flourish now that weren't flourishing pre-COVID. I know a lot of people are looking possibly quite negatively upon the business industry because a lot of industries or traditional industries are really struggling right now. But again, there's, like you said, you went up 350% last year. We as Grafton grew, you know, there is industries that are still growing. So what advice would you give to someone who's looking to get into business right now in this current landscape?
Yeah, I would think that there's never a better time to start than today. And I think that with the world we live in, with technology growing as fast as it's growing, there's always going to be opportunities in every sector. There's opportunities to advance and make things better and maybe automate it faster, etc. And I think what you're seeing right now is a moment in time, and a pandemic has hit, and it's crap, you know. It's, pardon my French, it's just not good. And you know, this is the moment where you can reflect on your own business and see how you can make it stronger. You can look at new ideas and start thinking about what is the world going to look like in 5 years. I feel too many entrepreneurs fall into a trap of reacting to right now in the moment and not thinking about where the world's going to be in 5 years. So you should always, by rule of thumb, build towards where you believe the world is going to be in the future. Like, I've, you know, people who've set up on the fly PPE equipment supplying businesses. I mean, you know, is that going to be as big in 5 years' time? Maybe, hopefully not, you know. But this is, I believe, you know, build for the future and look at industries where things are changing fast. Well, that's why Tesla, the stock is growing so fast, because people know he's thinking about the future better than anyone else, and he sees the world in a way that very few do. So people are happy to put money behind Elon, behind Jeff Bezos, etc. And that's going to continue to happen to the people who see further in the future. So I believe that if you're starting business today, you should think about where you believe the world is going to be in 5 years. Or if you have a business, you should be looking to reflect and adapt on this current economic crisis and strengthen your business to where it's going to be in 5 years. And I'm definitely doing that, you know. So I would definitely recommend that to everybody.
That's great advice. Lads, you got any questions for you?
So when people are setting off a business, finance is a huge concern, and you have, you know, experience raising larger amounts of capital. What do you recommend for, I suppose, people that want to start a business? Where should they go to get someone or an organization to fund their project or assist with their financial starts?
Yeah, so good question. I actually did a YouTube video on this, fundraising. So essentially, there's multiple different ways to raise finance. You know, you obviously have your traditional ways, like banks, etc., and different loan providers. But then you also have like government agencies. Enterprise Ireland is very good here in Ireland. They're one of the biggest funders of startups in the world, biggest agencies. And I think that would be my first port of call always, is like, look at your LEO office, your Enterprise Ireland, and look for what's available. Then I would look towards, you know, other ideas now. You know, there's obviously equity fundraising, which is getting investors to come on board. And that has its own challenges. I mean, you have to align your vision and goals and strategy with that of your investors. And so there's many different ways. I would suggest that you research. You live in an age now where there's more information on how to do this as good as, you know, better than I did it online. You know, Quora and even Reddit. And, you know, there's so many tips on how to do this successfully. And I would recommend that you go and research first and then start to think what would suit your business best, and then start to think, okay, well, you know, what would our business actually improve on or benefit from with this money? And then you start to get an idea of how much you need. You start to get an idea of you know, how you're going to either pay it back, or is this person now a shareholder? How are you going to manage their expectations? And so by deciding on the first what your business needs, then deciding on how you can get it, the funding, then you're also leading yourself down this path of further decisions which you have to make that suit you and your business. And I think too many people, and this is a big lesson that I've learned, you know, too many people take the first offer or first check that hits them. And I think if I could go back and do it again, you know, I have great investors, so I'm lucky. But I know a lot of friends who have received money early on from people who don't share the same vision or goals and alignment that they do. So you know, I would definitely recommend that.
Okay. If you were to use one word to describe Park Office and Park PMP today, what would that word be?
One word. Innovation.
Cool. You happy enough? Okay. No, thank you very much for your time, Garrett. Really, really appreciate it. We'll link out your YouTube channel and everything else, all your socials down below. Is there anything else you want to plug or anything else you want to mention before we hop off?
No, I think that's great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I really appreciate the conversation. A lot of value in this, and thanks, Mian, for your time. Yeah. Right. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, subscribe. Check Garrett out as well, and we will see you next week. Good night, we live.